Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Cuba's coral reefs are a kind of biological time capsule. The country has a small population and relatively little tourism. Plus, Cuba has taken the additional step of protecting some of its most productive reefs, which are called the Gardens of the Queen. For the first time now, a research vessel staffed with both American and Cuban scientists has visited those reefs together. Amy April was the leader of the expedition on the American side. She's a scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Welcome back to Living Lab.
Thanks, Heather. Thanks for having me.
Can you just start by describing the Gardens of the Queen? I mean, what does this reef look like when you're diving on it?
This reef looks like nothing else I've seen in the Caribbean. So when you get down on the reef, it's so much more active than other reefs in the Caribbean, and that's because there's so many more fish and a diversity of fish and just a large number of fish on the reef. And so they're busy moving around. And so that's the first thing I always focus on is just how active that reef is. And then when I get down on the reef, I study the corals and, you know, immediately I notice how much larger the corals are, how much more diverse they are, more colorful even than some of the other reefs I've been on. The other neat thing we see is we see sharks and we see large grouper, and that's something you don't see on a lot of reefs today.
You actually posted on your lab Facebook page, I think, a picture of one of your graduate students being approached by one of these big groups. I mean, this is a big fish who just kind of came up to say hi. Seemed like a neat little underwater moment.
Exactly. Yes. The grouper was checking out her little tiny sampling bags. So I think he thought we brought something down for him. But in fact, we did not.
Too bad for the grouper. So those beautiful reefs must have gotten hit pretty hard this September. Two hurricanes, both Irma and Maria. How hard hit was Cuba?
So the Cuban coral reefs, at least in the southern area where the Gardens of the Queens were totally untouched by the hurricanes. And so that's fantastic. Some of the northern reefs did get hit some. We didn't see them on this expedition, but our primary target was this Gardens of the Queens area, which fortunately did not see any impact from the hurricanes. And we did also not see much impact from global warming. So the corals there all looked pretty healthy.
You did stop, though, in the U.S. Virgin Islands on your way home, and they definitely got hit. What's it like in the Virgin Islands right now?
Yeah, so the Virgin Islands, the reefs were completely different than what we saw in Cuba. Anyway, they don't have as much fish and coral diversity as we see in Cuba. But what I noticed, and we've been studying these same reefs off St. John for about 2 years now, is how different some of them look. Like physically, I was like, "What? This is not the same reef that I was on in August." Was the last time I was there. And so some of these reefs,
just in the course of a few months,
In the course of a few months, exactly. Large boulders had moved. You know, some of the long-standing pillar corals and elkhorn corals are completely gone. In some cases, there was less macroalgae on the reefs, and so that's actually a good thing for the reefs. And so I think there's more potential.
In what way? I mean, so the macroalgae are like underwater plants.
Yeah, they're fleshy algae. They can kind of take over any available space. And so that had been totally cleared off some of these reefs just because they can't hold on during the movement of the water that was the result of the hurricane.
And then that makes more space for corals.
It makes more space for corals to settle. But the bad news is when we survey for small juvenile corals, and especially the soft corals, we didn't see a lot of those. So I think those did not make it through the hurricane.
These hurricanes are a natural part of life on a reef. They've been getting hit with hurricanes for as long as they've been around. What's the recovery process like?
Right. So they've been hit by hurricanes before, but this was two Category 5 hurricanes that hit St. John. So they've seen nothing like this, I think, in the past. That's fair to say. What is the recovery process like? Often, there's a period where the water is just murky. And, you know, that's a period we were not even there for. So the reports that I was reading said a month after the hurricane, the waters finally turned blue again, so that they were
just
so brown.
So much sediment, from the sediment. Mud, sand turned up. By
exactly. So there is a large island right next door that would be delivering lots of organic matter. So I think that impacted some of the corals that I'm seeing that were not doing so well. But the things that happen are with those added sediment and nutrients from the land, sometimes you can get a lot of fleshy algae growing. We didn't see that. We saw, again, the algae was removed. We did see some signs of disease on some of the corals, and that's something we're going to monitor. But overall, the recovery process is that there is more substrate that is cleared during a hurricane, and so that can help settlement and recruitment. But on the other hand, you have some damage to some of the long-standing corals as well, and that takes many, many years to recover from.
I'm talking with Amy April. She was the co-leader of a joint Cuban-American expedition to Cuba's Gardens of the Queen coral reefs recently. You mentioned earlier not seeing impacts of climate change in those southern Cuban coral reefs, the Gardens of the Queen, other than perhaps these stronger, more intense hurricanes. What kinds of impacts of climate change might you expect to see?
So one of the most frequent changes that we see on reefs are the bleaching of corals. And so when the seawater temperature rises just a couple degrees over many weeks, the algae within the corals will get kicked out of the coral and they'll basically turn white. They'll look bleached, like you've poured bleach on them. So we saw bleaching in one coral species that's pretty susceptible consistently throughout the gardens, but the other corals looked really healthy. So I don't know if this is exactly a climate change impact or something that's potentially hurting this coral in particular more. So that's one of the most common signs that we'll see. We can also see more disease. When the water warms up, you can have increased growth of pathogens on the reefs, which will start creating a variety of disease-type symptoms on corals. Some growth of tissue loss is sort of the worst aspect of that, but often these microbial mats will grow on the coral and sort of start eating away at the tissue. We didn't see a lot of that on this trip either, so all good news on those fronts.
You largely study the microbes that live in corals. I mean, it's kind of like with humans, we've got microbes in our intestines and on mm-hmm. our skin and everywhere else. For the corals, these are really necessary for life. What role do these bacteria that live in the corals play in either mediating some of these effects of climate change or maybe helping to protect them from some of the impacts of climate change?
So we think that these bacteria have a really critical role within the coral in helping them cycle nutrients and organic matter, which helps sustain them. But also they have the ability to secrete antibiotic type products, which can fend off the pathogens. So there's a direct link between, you know, if the waters are warming up, you're getting more pathogen growth. Well, if the coral bacteria are secreting these antibiotics, that would help protect the coral. And it is, you know, you see some corals that have like no other kinds of organisms growing on them, right? So something that they're producing is really able to keep them totally clean of any kind of epibiont growth. And so that's a pretty amazing feature that the coral has.
When it comes to human health with the microbes that live in our gut, there are starting to be these ideas like, you know, you could actually do a fecal transplant to treat some infections or just problems with the microbial community there. And there's been some talk in the coral community of doing a similar kind of thing, that maybe you could find algae or bacteria that were more heat tolerant and try to mm-hmm. kind of put those into reefs that seem more sensitive. What do you think of those kind of ideas and where does it stand?
I think those ideas are exactly the kind of experiments we need to be doing right now and trying to those kinds of experiments actually tell us what is going to be beneficial or helpful for the coral or not. And so, you know, this is a long way away from something that you could physically do on a reef. You know, spreading new bacteria or algae on the reef is, you know, something it's highly permitted and we need to be careful about. But we can do these things in the lab. And our lab's been doing this with a local coral this summer. We tested these ideas, and other labs around the world are too. And so the idea is it's the bacteria, but it's also the chemicals they're producing too. And so that's the whole new frontier of science that is just now starting to open up to and trying to characterize what are some of these metabolites that these corals are able to produce and how does that impact the host. So we have a lot to learn.
My guest is Amy April of Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. She was co-leader of a recent joint Cuban-American expedition to Cuba's Gardens of the Queen coral reefs. The Cuba part of this is the other thing we haven't talked about yet. I mean, so you first went to Cuba shortly after President Obama kind of began that process of normalizing relations back in 2014, kind of an optimistic period. This time you were going back and there had been this brewing controversy about whether American diplomats had been kind of attacked and made sick, maybe with some sort of acoustic attack or something like that. I mean, there was a lot of tension when you arrived in Cuba end of October, beginning of November. How different was the mood with the scientists you were working with?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of tension. I probably picked one of the worst politically political times in politics to go there. But nothing has changed with our Cuban scientists, our colleagues. You know, they're scientists like us. They want to get out there and get the science done and get the data. And so working with them was no problem. Some of the challenges that we encountered were working with the governmental officials that basically really stepped in to help coordinate this expedition. And I really appreciate their efforts, but they do everything in a very strict way. You know, there's a set guideline for everything, but this is the first time that an outside boat had ever been allowed into this protected region. So there were no really set guidelines. And so that's one of the challenges that we encountered.
And some of the rules, at least from the American end of things, changed while you were actually out and underway. You were out there on the reef when President Trump put into place a new travel ban for U.S. citizens as a result of that whole controversy. I mean, did that change the course of your cruise, literally or figuratively?
It did not change the course of our cruise. It did change, the mindset of the Cuban officials. And they said something to me after the cruise and that they had actually wanted me to come into the port mid-cruise. And that was logistically really challenging. It's like a 6-hour journey to get into the port. And basically, they had wanted me to come in to reassure me that nothing had changed on their part when President Trump made this new ban and that they were still committed to our project and our science and supporting it. And, you know, that when they were telling me that after the cruise, that just really touched me that, you know, that they were in this for the good.
The resources for those Cuban scientists that you're working with are so limited. I mean, you told me after that first trip that one of the collaborators you discovered was a former scientist who had left his career in science because he couldn't make ends meet as a scientist. For these Cuban scientists that you're working with, how amazing is the opportunity to be on this research ship and out doing this kind of research, working really closely with American scientists who do have access to a lot more? In the way of funding and technology, all of that.
Yes, several of the Cuban scientists, especially the students, described it as a life-changing opportunity, you know, like a once-in-a-lifetime experience to be working on this. It's not only a research vessel, it's also a luxury yacht.
Well, there is that.
which is a perk for even American scientists. But their ability to get out on so many reefs, to experience the technology that we were applying to the science, to work together on common problems. I mean, these were all things that they expressed to me that they were just really appreciative of. And, you know, and I was also very humbled by the fact that here they are with their limited tools, but still really strong expertise of this area. And they were able to help us guide the scientific questions just by what they knew of this area.
With all the political ups and downs that are involved in trying to do this collaborative work, where do you see it going? What's the future of trying to do coral reef science in Cuba?
Right. I actually feel this tremendous weight now to try to continue what I've started. And, you know, towards the end of the cruise, I was sort of like, okay, maybe this is it. We did this great cruise. We have amazing data. We're going to keep working together with some Cuban students that come over on the data. But, you know, this was just a tremendous undertaking for me to pull off. With so many people involved and helping even plan it. But the Cubans invited us to the scientific conference where we presented some of our results and what we were planning to do. And then there was this amazing display of gratitude for what we had done for their country and the science and such an appreciation. You know, I've worked in many foreign countries and I've just never felt this before. I mean, I was almost, you know, to the point of tears, except I was needed back at the ship immediately. So
no time for tears.
It was sort of no time. But, you know, after I reflected on the moment, I mean, it's amazing what we were able to do. And I had another scientist this week contact me about wanting to work there. And, you know, I'm going to tell them that this has taken me basically 3 years to get where I am, right? And we have our foot in the door, and they like me. They like our science. And so I think it's something that I have to continue, but we can't still use federal funds to do this kind of work. So that's really the biggest challenge right now.
That's Amy April. She's a coral reef biologist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and co-leader of a recent joint Cuban-American expedition to Cuba's Gardens of the Queen coral reefs. Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Heather.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook or on Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.